It's nearly 12 o'clock and time for the KMXT Midday Report. Thank you for listening to KMXT. On 100.1 FM, it's your public radio station, broadcasting from overcast Kodiak, Alaska, where it's 36 degrees out at the airport right now, calm winds, a chance of rain and snow before 1 p.m. today, then rain after that, cloudy skies for the rest of the day with a high near 40, southeast winds gusting to 20. Rain tonight too with a low of 35, southeast winds continuing and gusting to 20. And for Thursday, rain and snow becoming all rain after 10 a.m. Could be heavy at times. High near 42 with east winds gusting as high as 35 tomorrow. Coming up on the Midday Report, Kirsten Dobroth visits the Fisherman's Showcase. The Alaska House of Representatives is debating over the kind of message they want to be sending when they send out checks. And Representative Don Young lies in state at the U.S. Capitol. Those stories, plus another seafood processor is moving out of Kenai.
Live from NPR News, I'm Lakshmi Singh. Western intelligence suggests senior Russian advisors may not be giving President Vladimir Putin a complete picture of how Russian forces are faring in Ukraine. Pentagon spokesman John Kirby spoke to the latest U.S. and European assessment of the war Russia began more than a month ago against its neighbor.
We would concur with the conclusion that Mr. Putin has not been fully informed by his Ministry of Defense at every turn over the last month.
Kirby says that during the last 24 hours, the U.S. has seen a repositioning of a small percentage of Russian troops placed against the Ukrainian capital. Early assessments are that some have been repositioned to Belarus, whose president is allied with Putin. But Kirby says the majority of forces Putin put around Kiev are still there in a largely defensive position, but the attacks have not stopped. Reporting from the Ukrainian capital, NPR's Nathan Roth says Russia has kept up its attacks of the capital, another major city, even though just yesterday at peace talks in Turkey, Russian negotiators declared plans to quickly pull Russian troops back.
Russian negotiators in Istanbul said the country would be moving troops away from Kyiv and Chernihiv, two major Ukrainian cities where they've suffered heavy losses in recent weeks. Oleksandr Matazunik, a spokesman for Ukraine's Ministry of Defense, said through an interpreter they've seen some movements since that announcement.
At the same time, there is no mass-scale withdrawal of Russian troops from those areas. We don't see it.
Meanwhile, shelling continued at both places overnight, heightening skepticism Russia will follow through. Nathan Rapp, NPR News, Kyiv.
Presidents Biden and Zelensky spoke by phone today. The U.S. committed $500 million in direct budgetary aid to the Ukrainian government. Biden rolled up his sleeve today for his second COVID-19 vaccine booster shot, one day after the FDA and CDC authorized a fourth shot for people over 50 overall. NPR's Tamara Keith reports Biden also announced the launch of a new website where people can go for all their COVID needs, from testing to treatment.
COVID.gov is meant to be a one-stop shop for everything Americans need to deal with the virus. Biden says the new site is part of moving to a new moment in the pandemic. It doesn't mean COVID is gone, he said.
It means that COVID-19 no longer controls our lives. That's what it means. Cases are ticking up, as we thought they might. But now, thanks to the foundation we've laid, America has the tools to protect people, all people.
His remarks over, Biden took off his suit jacket and rolled up his sleeve.
And I'm going to get my second booster shot.
Biden didn't wince and insisted.
Didn't hurt a bit.
Biden again called on Congress to pass additional funding for the COVID response.
That's Tamara Keith reporting. It's NPR.
Ang NPR Balita ay hatid sa inyo ng Providence Kodiak Island Counseling Center. Para sa kaukulang impormasyon tungkol sa aming mga serbisyo, tumawag lamang sa 481-2400.
Kodiak's annual commercial fishing trade show wrapped up Saturday with a Fisherman's Showcase skills competition. It was the first time Comfish was held in person since the pandemic upended daily life and disrupted mass gatherings worldwide. KMXT's Kirsten Dobroth reports.
Comfish is arguably Kodiak's biggest event of the year. It went virtual in 2020 and was rebooted in person this year. As afternoon clouds blew in on Saturday, a small crowd gathered in the Harbor Convention Center's parking lot to watch the Fisherman's Showcase.
All right, are you ready? Fisherman, take your marks. Get set. Go.
And there it is.
The four fishermen competing in this year's challenge battled against the clock and each other, completing essential skills of the trade at five different stations. First was rope coiling, then knot tying and a separate rail tie, where a line is fixed to a metal pole. The final two stations were more challenging. Each contestant had to knock down a target with a hook toss. Only then could they pop their neoprene gumby suits out of their dry bags and awkwardly wiggle into them.
One arm going in. There's the second arm. Now I just need to get the zipper up.
Getting the suit zipped up all the way with the face flap Velcroed down quickly proved to be the crux of the event.
And once your flap is over, it's on your left-hand side. There it is. Oh, it's close. And there we go.
Perry Nelson won the event in just under 2 minutes. The 35-year-old from Kodiak says he's a lifelong fisherman and no stranger to the challenge.
No, I did it the last time they had it, and it's a lot of fun. Yep, I did. Yeah. I'm glad they do something like this. It's fun.
Nelson took home a knife and a belt for his Fisherman's Showcase win. He didn't say if he'd return to defend his title in the future, although according to some in the crowd, they'd be back next year. Nearly 40 exhibitors made the trip to Kodiak for this year's trade show, and over a dozen panelists presented in person and virtually for the fishery forums. Attendance was down compared to pre-pandemic years, according to the Kodiak Chamber of Commerce, but they're hopeful that this year's return to normal is a good sign for years to come. In Kodiak, I'm Kirsten Dobroth.
The Alaska House of Representatives is scheduled to debate the state budget this week. One of the big differences over the budget is not over dollars and cents. It's over what name to call the money that will be sent to Alaskans later this year. As Alaska Public Media and KTOO's Andrew Kitchenman reports, the disagreement is over the message lawmakers want to send.
This year's budget is unlike any the legislature has debated since the price of oil fell in 2014. Oil prices are back up, and so is state revenue. That allows for some big-ticket spending proposals. And under both Governor Mike Dunleavy's budget proposal and the one the House Finance Committee passed last week, Alaskans would receive more than $2,500 in payments from the state. Dunleavy says that's the amount permanent fund dividends should be this year. Members of the House Majority Caucus have proposed a dividend half that size. They're calling the other half of the payment an energy relief check. Palmer Republican Representative Delana Johnson sponsored a budget amendment that would have paid the entire amount as dividends, which she said is closer to the current formula. She says the legislature comes up with excuses each year to not follow the formula.
We can say the stock market is volatile. We can say all kinds of what-ifs as why we don't want to pay it. But the fact is we have a statute. We've struggled with the statute. We've talked about the statute. I mean, this has brought the legislature to a standstill over the last 4 years.
Anchorage Democratic Representative Andy Josephson is a member of the majority. He opposed the amendment.
My main problem with this is that it fundamentally says, let's forget the lessons of 2014 to 2021, as if that part of history didn't happen.
During those years, paying larger dividends would have required some combination of spending cuts, new taxes, or larger draws from state savings. So Josephson is concerned with the message describing the entire $2,500 payment as a dividend would send, that it would set up Alaskans' expectations that dividends would be that size every year. Nikiski Republican Representative Ben Carpenter supported the amendment. He says setting PFDs at the lower amount also would send a message that the legislature wants to spend more of the annual draw from the permanent fund on government.
We're communicating
our intention to do something with the permanent fund earnings.
The two proposals also reflect a split over the formula setting the dividend amount, which hasn't been followed since 2015. Neither proposal would follow the current formula, which would pay a dividend of roughly $4,200. Anchorage Republican Representative Sarah Rasmussen predicts that Alaskans will understand the payments they receive this year as dividends, regardless of what they're called.
I don't think that because we're calling it something different, the public will recognize that this is two separate payments. We can speak about it, but the majority of the public doesn't tune into the news regularly, I don't think.
She compared the energy relief check proposal to similar payments the state paid in 2008. She says that as long as Alaskans receive the money at the same time, it will appear to be a PFD. Fairbanks Democratic Representative Adam Wold disagrees. He says the 2008 payments did not set up public expectations that dividends would be higher from then on, in part because the state government said it was responding to high energy prices. And he says that can happen again.
It definitely was noted as a separate amount due to high oil, and I'd like to keep it that way.
Fairbanks Republican Representative Bart Laban also says he's concerned about the precedent of calling the entire payment a dividend.
I mean, it wasn't too many months ago in this building, we were talking broad-based tax like it was something that had to happen sooner than later. And the only question to be answered is, was it a sales or an income?
Laban says the talk of taxes stopped this year, but he predicts it could come back in the future if the state continues to pay higher dividends. The House Finance Committee failed to adopt the amendment, which means that half of the payment is still called an energy relief check. The timing over when the budget debate will begin is uncertain. On Monday and Tuesday, the House did not hold a full floor session after some members refused to wear face masks. House Speaker Louise Stutes reinstituted a mask requirement after at least one representative and multiple staff members tested positive for COVID-19. In Juneau, I'm Andrew Kitchenman.
Ready, step. Ready, step.
Alaska Congressman Don Young entered the U.S. Capitol for the last time yesterday. 8 uniformed service members carried his flag-draped coffin up the stone stairs of the U.S. House Tuesday morning. Young was Alaska's sole representative in the House for 49 years and was the longest-serving Republican in history. He died March 18th. As he lay in Statuary Hall, Young was remembered for his public service and for his colorful character. Here's House Minority Leader Kevin McCarthy.
Don was strong in his faith and strong in his language. We got to be honest. Don was as rough as Alaskans wild.
A memorial service was held for Young at a church in Virginia today, and another will be held at the Anchorage Baptist Temple on Saturday. Constantine Metal Resources updated the technical report for its potential mining project. The new information raises questions about how the company plans to get the ore out of the Chilkat Valley. KHNS's Corinne Smith reports.
Constantine Metal Resources revised its technical report earlier this month after a review by the British Columbia Securities Commission. The report adds more details on how the company will get ore from the Upper Link Canal to Asian markets. Constantine President and CEO Garfield McVeigh called the updates housekeeping. He says the company is currently focused on determining whether the mine is viable, then developing infrastructure.
We don't need an ore loading terminal until we know the project is going to be feasible, and that's still down the road. It's still, as they say, it's probably 5 years before we're at feasibility.
Constantine's Palmer project is still in the exploratory stages to mine gold, copper, zinc, and barite at a site near the U.S.-Canadian border at the headwaters of the Chilkat Valley. In the report, Constantine proposes zinc and copper concentrate trailers are trucked to Haynes Deepwater Port Facility, owned by Alaska Marine Lines, or AML. The company proposes containers then be barged by AML roughly 15 miles to Skagway's port, transferred at the ore terminal there and loaded onto barges destined for smelters in Asia. But Haynes does not have an ore terminal. Plans to develop one are highly controversial in the community, drawing environmental and economic concerns, debated in town halls, editorials, and social media. Though Haynes received a $20 million federal grant in December to rehab its freight and fuel dock, Lutac Dock, an ore terminal is not currently part of that development project. Haynes Mayor Douglas Olrud says the plan has potential, but it's too soon to evaluate.
We're probably at least 10 years away from them developing the ore bodies for shipment. And so I think it's a plan that could definitely work, but I imagine there's going to be changes to that if they get to the point where they're transporting ore. And once they get to that stage, it'll be a much more refined plan.
In Skagway, the ore terminal currently owned by the Alaska Industrial Development and Export Authority, or ADA, will be turned back over to the municipality next year in March 2023. Skagway Mayor Andrew Cremata says the municipality is in negotiations with Yukon mining executives in their port redevelopment process, but he has not had any recent communications with Constantine about their proposal.
So it's interesting to me that, you know, another entity would put out a report that their intent is to use our port and not having engaged us in any kind of conversation about what their needs might be or how it might logistically work or really anything.
Alaska Marine Lines declined to comment about Constantine's proposed barging plan. Environmentalists say the company has had to change its public reporting before around road access, following a complaint filed with the BC Securities Commission and a subsequent review by Canadian regulators. Chris Zimmer is with the conservation group Rivers Without Borders and says this latest update could be a result of regulatory pressure. He criticized Constantine for waiting to benefit from publicly funded infrastructure projects.
So, you know, this kind of smacks to me of corporate socialism, of this company sitting and waiting for government to basically build them a transportation plan because they can't afford to do it themselves. And this is a weak point for the company. If they can't get their product to market, you're not going to have a successful mine. And as it stands, they do not have any kind of approved, workable plan to get their product to market.
The report states the Palmer Project has yet to determine mineral reserves and economic viability. Constantine President Garfield McVeigh says there's more advanced underground exploration to come. In Haynes, I'm Corinne Smith.
Another seafood processor is moving out of Kenai this salmon season. Copper River Seafoods is ending its run in the old Snug Harbor seafood plant, leaving one major salmon processor in the area, but promising the addition of a new company soon. The Alaska-based company is leaving the area just ahead of a big change to the Cook Inlet fishery. KDLL's Sabine Pooks has the update.
Processors like Copper River buy fish from commercial fishermen and then bring that catch to market. As commercial fishermen have dealt with declining salmon runs and management changes in Cook Inlet, processors from Kenai to Homer have left also, leaving fishermen with fewer options. In a letter, Copper River CEO Scott Blake said those factors were to blame for the company ending its salmon buying on the Kenai Peninsula, plus increasing production costs for the company. The letter didn't call out any particular management changes, and a spokesperson for Copper River Seafoods couldn't be reached before airtime. But the largest recent change to the commercial fishing landscape in the region is the impending closure of a large part of Cook Inlet to commercial salmon fishing. That controversial change was approved by a federal council in late 2020 and goes into effect for the first time this summer, short of a last-minute legal holdup. Opponents of the decision warned that closing the fishery would take out local processors, too. But Paul Dale says even before the council's decision, processors have been pulling out of the inlet. Dale's processing operation, Snug Harbor Seafoods, sold to Copper River in 2019.
Processing has been changing in the Cook Inlet area, Kenai area, Cook Inlet specific, for probably an easy 20 years.
The erosion of processors has been a steady one, Dale says, as fishing time and opportunities have decreased. But then in the last decade, the size and value of Cook Inlet commercial salmon harvests have dropped, bringing close to 10 processors quickly down to just a few. Dale says Copper River has scaled back since it's been running the Kalifornsky Beach Road plant in the last 3 years.
And while they did not achieve the success that they hoped they would in Cook Inlet, that does not necessarily mean that different companies aren't experiencing success in Cook Inlet or might be able to achieve success in Cook Inlet.
Audrey Salmon, office manager for the local Drift Association, says Copper River stopped buying fish from Kisilov fishermen last year. And after that, many fishermen took their business to Pacific Star, which today is the only Kenai-based processing plant for the Drift fleet. OBI Seafoods in Homer also buys from fishermen in Kisilov and Inilchik. Other fishermen have started marketing their catch themselves. Salmon says those fishermen, called catcher processors, have become more popular in Cook Inlet as more processors have left the area. Copper River said in its letter it will be replaced by a new company, Rogue Wave. Rogue Wave doesn't yet have a digital footprint. The letter from Copper River says the company will make an announcement soon about what its presence in the area will look like. And it says the buyers will work with fishermen in Kenai, Kisilov, and Inilchik. Copper River, meanwhile, says it will continue to work on groundfish programs in Homer, Whittier, and Cordova. In Kenai, I'm Sabine Pooks.
Today's KMXT Local News is brought to you in part by Discover Kodiak, a one-stop source for visitor information on Kodiak and other destinations around the state. On the web at kodiak.org and at the Visitor Center in the Ferry Terminal Building at 100 Marine Way, 486-4782.
Insight Daily Radio.
From food to fashion, science to tech talk, or for just plain fun, we've got you covered. From the Art of All Things, here's Lasana Jeffries.
If you're an average blinker, your eyes will be blinked closed for about 30 minutes a day. The average blink lasts for about 1/10 of a second. The average eye blinks over 20,000 times a day. As you read a sentence, your eyes are moving back and forth 100 times per second. Your eyes don't freeze in the cold because of the salt in your tears. 1 in 500 people have one blue eye and one brown eye. A human eyeball weighs about an ounce. Blue eyes have less pigment than brown eyes. About a third of the human race has 20/20 vision. 75% of Americans use some sort of corrective lens. Almost half of Americans would consider wearing glasses as a fashion accessory, even if they didn't need them. If you go blind in one eye, you'll lose about 1/5 of your vision. Why does your nose run when you cry? It's excess fluid from your eyes. 2 out of 3 adults in the United States will need glasses at some point in their lives. In 1979, a South African boy was found to have a marigold seed growing in his left eye. When you're looking at someone you love, your pupils dilate, and when you're looking at someone you hate, they do the same thing. Doctors have yet to find a way to transplant an eyeball. The optic nerve that connects the eye to the brain is too sensitive to reconstruct successfully. Out of all of the muscles in your body, the muscles that control your eyes are the most active, and 80% of vision problems worldwide are avoidable or even curable. Thanks for listening. I'm Lisanna Jeffries.
Insight Daily Radio.
This is the Island Messenger, a look at personal messages, the weather, and community announcements.
Good afternoon. Here's your Island Messenger. For Wednesday, it is the 30th day of March, Swedish Friday. The sun rose today at 7:42. It will set again at 8:46. That will give us 13 hours and 4 minutes of daylight, a gain of 5 minutes compared to yesterday. Our record high for this date was 54 degrees. That was set in 1915. And our record low was 3. That was set in 1944. Trying to refresh our local weather. It's not. Here we go. 37 degrees under overcast skies out at the airport. They have southeast winds at 6 right now. They're calling for a chance of rain and snow this afternoon before 1 p.m. Then rain after that. Cloudy skies today with a high near 40. Southeast winds to 50, gusting to 20. Rain tonight too, with southeast winds continuing at 20. And for tomorrow, rain and snow, becoming all rain after 10 a.m. The rain could be heavy at times tomorrow, and the wind is going to be strong too. They're calling for east winds to 20, gusting to 35 tomorrow. We have a high tide coming up here on the east side. That will happen at 1:44 this afternoon and be 8.7 feet. That will be followed by a low tide at 8:04 this evening, minus 2/3 of a foot. Our next high tide will be at 2:23 in the morning and be 8.5 feet. And our morning low tide here on the east side will happen at 8:21 a.m. tomorrow and be 2/10 of a foot. Over on the west side, your high tide will happen at 2:20 this afternoon and be 14.2 feet in Larsen Bay. That'll be followed by a low tide at 8:40 p.m. of minus 1.1 feet. Your next high tide will be at 2:52 a.m. and be 14.6 feet. And your low tide on the west side for tomorrow morning will be at 9:03 a.m. and be minus 1/10 of a foot. Mariners, here's your forecast for Marmot Island to Sitka, Kodiak's east side offshore. Gale warning for tomorrow. Southeast 25 today and seas to 8 feet. For tomorrow, east 35, seas to 16 feet. And for tomorrow night, east 40, seas coming up to 19 feet. Over on our west side in the Shelikof Strait, gale warning for tomorrow as well. East 15, increasing to 25 this afternoon, seas building to 7 feet this afternoon. For tomorrow, northeast 35, seas building to 13 feet. And for tomorrow night in the Shelikof, northeast 45, seas to 17 feet. The Assembly is having a work session tomorrow. That will be happening at 6:30 p.m. in the Assembly Chambers. Next Tuesday, the Women's Bay Service Area will be having their regular board meeting. That's happening at the Women's Bay Fire Hall at 5:30 p.m. next Tuesday. Also next Tuesday, the Fire Protection Area Number 1 will be having their regular meeting. That's happening at 6 p.m. in the Bayside Fire Hall on Tuesday. Senior citizens of Kodiak is once again in need of paper bags, and you can drop them off anytime, Monday through Friday, between 8 a.m. and 5 p.m. at the Senior Center. The City Ports and Harbor Advisory Board will hold a meeting on Friday. That's happening at 12 noon in the Fisherman's Hall. The meeting is open to the public. Agendas and meeting packets are available online at the City of Kodiak website, and the meeting will be web-streamed from that website as well. If you need more information, call the City Harbor Department at 486-8080. Kodiak 4-H is having a spaghetti dinner. That's happening next Saturday, April 2nd, at the Rendezvous. Show up between 4:30 and 6 p.m. on Saturday and treat yourself to a $15 per plate delicious dinner, baked goods by donation, and they offer dine-in or takeout options. All proceeds benefit Kodiak 4-H Livestock Project. Again, that's next Saturday, 4:30 to 6 p.m. at the Rendezvous. The Kodiak History Museum is relaunching their temporary exhibit program, and they're looking for proposals for future exhibits. Is there a story that you think is not talked about enough, or a topic or issue that you'd like to explore? KHM is accepting exhibit proposals for their new exhibit opening August 2022. The proposal should be submitted by May 1st. For more information on how to propose an exhibit, contact Lynn Walker, who is their curator, at curator@kodiakhistorymuseum.org, or visit the Kodiak History Museum website. That's at www.kodiakhistorymuseum.org. And you can learn Spanish pastry making via Zoom. The instructor is Jocelyn Keys, and it's happening Thursday, April 14th, between 6 p.m. and 8 p.m. Learn to make Grandma's special Spanish pastry recipe just in time for springtime brunches. Also can be deliciously vegan and gluten-free. Friends and family will never know. Follow along at home and then enjoy your delectable dish. You need to register at kodiakcollege.asapconnected.com.
Kodiak Arts Council presents the Roots Music Powerhouse Duo, The Small Glories, on Thursday, March 31st at 7 p.m. at the Gerald C. Wilson Auditorium. Kara Luft and J.D. Edwards are a musical tour de force partnership planted on the Canadian prairies.
I've seen the Rockies rise high above the trees. I've seen to my knees.
NPR Music says Luft is a Waylon Jennings alum whose work on the clawhammer banjo is to die for, while Edwards' guitar and vocal harmonies deepen and enrich the duo's sound. Don't miss this opportunity to see the Small Glories perform live in Kodiak. Tickets are available at kodiakarts.org or at the box office the day of the show.
Listen for the Island Messenger here on Public Radio KMXT 3 times a day. Monday through Friday at 9 a.m., during the Midday Report at 12:20, and in the evening at 7 o'clock. If you have a community announcement or personal message, including lost and found items or pets, you can call KMXT at 486-3181, fax us at 486-2733, or email psa@kmxt.org. Thank you.